Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the podcast, I Read It Online Somewhere, your science questions answered.
So this is episode 30 of I Read It Online Somewhere. We are here every couple of weeks to discuss what we have read online and answer your strange and wonderful science-based questions, like, how does your body hair know when to stop growing?
I'm Amy, I'm joined by two science teachers, Ross.
Wait, that's not Amy. That's Mickey Mouse. Mickey, welcome.
Oh boy.
We have been bought over by Disney, everybody. So Mickey has...
It's so exciting to be here.
Mickey has joined us on the podcast this week. So Mickey, let's have a big science interview. So Mickey, what do you think about the big science news of the week? The AstraZeneca vaccine might cause blood clotting? And countries everywhere have stopped giving it.
Do it was really hard when, like, Mickey just laughs all the time, and it's one of those really sensitive subjects where you can't laugh. Like, huh? Oh boy, what a pickle.
It's when your introduction to the imitation is the wrong word. What's it called? Impression. Introduction to impression is a certain, like, keyword or phrase. And then if it's a laugh, it's not appropriate.
Exactly,
for people
dying. It's not appropriate. I'm trying to think what other ones could we have used? We could add Elmo.
Elmo thinks that this is a bat.
No. Elmo's not really a sort of sensible person to have discussing this.
I don't have any impression.
Kermit the Frog?
Yeah, that's better, yeah.
Could we have a Kermit the Frog? He is talking about the AstraZeneca vaccine, and he doesn't really, again, not a sensible thing to do.
And he's really hard to do. Like, I feel like I have to hold my breath. We could try well, you know, this AstraZeneca stuff, all of this information is incredibly precious.
Oh, that was good. Okay. Who knew Andrew had a hidden talent for all of these things?
Smeagol and Crumb really feel that the AstraZeneca vaccine information is quite scary. But I think, Precious, that the Hobbits shouldn't be worried about it too much because we're still trying to find all the information out.
Right, great. Well, let's cut that and use that. That's excellent work, by the way. And that's clearly not someone who's just tried that for the first time today.
This is not my first time, no. So guys, you'll notice things are a little bit different this week, and Amy's not with us, but we hope that she'll be with us again soon.
Yeah.
Sounds like she died. She hasn't died.
She's not dead. She's feeling a bit under the weather. So
I'm terrible at giving news like that.
So see, when I'm terrible, thank you for introducing me. I'm Ross. Andrew introduced me well.
Right. Well, hold on. You hadn't let me finish because I was in the middle of my I Amy bit.
Okay.
I mean, we went on and did impressions for a bit. 10 minutes.
So, don't worry. The impressions will all stay in the final edit.
So. I'm Amy and I failed science at school, but luckily for me I'm joined by two scientist teachers, Ross.
Hello.
And Andrew. Oh, hi. Oh, we have similar voices, Andrew. Yes, we do, Amy, but that's okay because we've just explained why you're not here. And moving on. So, our podcast is a look at some of the science stories we read online this week, and we try to answer your questions. If you want to get in touch with us with your questions, please email us at ireaditos@gmail.com or ireaditos on all social medias, so we can start off with our science fact of the week. Science fact of the week. Did we both forget about this bit?
Yes, we did.
Yes,
let's
cut
it. Just the two of us. Let's plow on. Oh, wait, let's do
I just looked over and went, oh, God. Ross has forgotten about it, too.
Let's do... let's pick a... Like, try and give me a topic, and I'll try and come up with something about it.
Do you want me to just find one?
No, let's see. Let's just have a back and forth.
Okay.
Let's just have a knowledge of.
All right. Oh,
this
okay.
This is a new part. All right, knowledge of. Right.
Knowledge of. Knowledge of.
All right, we need a topic for a knowledge of. Right, we might need to a random word generator. Scream or chest. There's your choices.
Scream or chest. Scream.
Okay.
Right. So what do we do?
We just let's talk about screaming. So I'll help with some knowledge. So the loudest noise that can be made by humans is round about 135 decibels. So that would be the sort of loudest scream that someone can make. And that is enough to permanently deafen someone if they were close enough. It's not definitely enough to permanently deafen you, but it could do.
Oh, that's quite cool. Right, okay, my little fact on Scream. I've got two, I just need to find the other one because I can't remember what it's called. It's got a specific name. I've totally ruined this. But I couldn't remember who did this, but The Scream is the name of a painting, which is one of the most famous paintings that you'd ever seen, with the sort of hands and the wavy lines, done by Expressionist artist Edvard Munch.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. I've got another one. I just need
need to bounce back and forth. I need to come up with one or I lose. Something about a scream. Now I'm struggling here. I think you, unless if you've got one, you win the knowledge of.
I have got one.
Win the knowledge.
I have got one, but do you want to hear about it? Right. Okay. So my little fact about screams is that there is a very specific scream that you will hear in almost every single movie ever made, going back to the 1950s. And it's called the Wilhelm Scream, right?
Yeah.
So it's a total stock scream. Now, hold on, let me bring it up. So let's see if I can find it. Yeah, so it's that one that goes, ah!
Yeah.
Right? So that is the Wilhelm Scream, and it's put in by sound production as a sort of nod to the original place where this is found. But see, as soon as you know about the Wilhelm Scream,
you will totally hear it everywhere.
So you'll see it in, there's lots of movies, like it's definitely in Indiana Jones, it's definitely in Star Wars. It's certainly in Star Wars when a stormtrooper falls off things. That's normally when you hear
okay.
it. It's in Toy Story, it's in like a whole load of different films. But it's absolutely fascinating.
So is it just because people didn't want to record a new scream, so they just use the same one? Or is it like a Easter egg type thing, or what is it?
Yeah, so it's more like a nod Easter egg sort of thing to the original film that it was in called Distant Drums.
Oh, cool.
Which is a stock sound effect. So it's just absolutely brilliant. Like, I don't know, it's just really cool. And it's one of those ones that you can hear about it in loads of different things. It's in so much media. It is even featured in Red Dead Redemption.
I have just thought of another scream thing, but I think I'll give you the win. But you can smash a glass with a scream if you scream at the right frequency for the glass. So most glass, especially stuff like crystal, the way it's formed, it has like a resonant frequency. That's why you can get your, with crystal glasses, if you sort of dampen your finger and you sort of take it around the top, you can make it make a noise.
Oh,
but you can't do it with normal glasses. They tend not to work very well for that. Because it's the structure in the crystal that makes it do that. It just makes it all resonate at the same thing, and that's what makes a noise. So if you can match that frequency, then you can make it wobble, and if you do it big enough, you could make it crack, but probably wouldn't. It would probably just wobble.
Oh,
but if it had an imperfection, then it could crack.
Well, that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
So does it have to be the same frequency?
Yeah, it has to be the same frequency. Resonant frequencies get quite interesting because it's the sort of same reason that when armies cross a bridge, they don't cross over in step, like they have to walk like out of step. There was a problem with this with the Millennium Bridge a couple of years ago, that it had a really strong resonant frequency. So when people were walking across it, the frequency of people walking was similar to the resonant frequency of the bridge, so it started to vibrate and shake. So they had to.
Is that so that you're generating interference?
No, probably not interference. Let me think about this carefully. No, I don't think so. No, it'll just be the. Everything that's made up of like a simple structure. So not like a human body, because we're made up of lots of different things. We've got bones, muscles, skin. But if you had like a wooden table, for example, all the different parts of that wooden table will have a resonant frequency. And if you've got things at the same length, like the legs of a table, they'll all probably vibrate at the same frequency. So you can make the whole sort of table wobble by doing that.
Oh, that's quite cool.
So if you poorly design something like a bridge, you can make it fall over.
Oh, brilliant.
And it happened many years ago, 1960s, Tacoma Bridge. Tacoma Narrows, I think it's called. Basically, the wind got it to this steel suspension bridge. It was wobbling all over the place and broke apart.
Oh, that's quite cool. Total random thought here.
Yeah.
Right. I wonder if that's, you know, the story of, is it the Horn of Jericho? And from, so like going back Sunday school,
yeah.
And I know we're a science podcast, but just, I wonder if that's where that comes from. You know how some of the stories, etc., that are found in religious texts, etc., they have a basis in reality.
Yeah.
And, or not in reality, sorry.
We should do a podcast on that. Life. There we go.
Oh, that would be quite good, actually, because... Well, oh, hold
like
on.
Like the
wait.
Seven
Let
plagues
me do
of
one,
Egypt.
And then I'm going to go back.
Do the plagues of Egypt?
No, I'm not.
Okay, we'll save that.
But I do like about the plagues of Egypt one. But this one is that it go like, I can't remember who it is, but they blow the Horn of Jericho,
yeah.
And the walls of Jericho fall down. And I wonder if it's to do with like resonant frequency. If there was if the horn was specifically shaped, blah blah blah. Now, obviously, that's one that like. Without actually having the horn, there's no way to test it out. There's no way to test that theory.
So probably what's more likely is like troops marching around the walls could cause it to fall over.
Oh, because they did. Oh, but is that what they? And now I actually can't really remember the story, but I think they did do that.
I'm sure they went round and round. Okay, so that's more likely to cause that to happen than the horn doing it. You'd need a ridiculously powerful, almost like multiple explosions to create a sound that could
all at once. Yeah. But interesting. I wonder though if there is some sort of, basis within.
Yeah, if you had
a simple
wooden structure wall, or because most stuff built then was probably a combination of sort of stone and wood. You probably could have. If loads of people marching in time or whatever could cause something to fall down. So.
Yeah. No, my other thing that I was like I got quite excited at is There is a really good scientific study in the Bible.
Oh.
So it's like it's a complete experimental procedure is set out. And it's, I think it's in Daniel 1. So Daniel goes to the king and he basically like separates this group of people and says, feed these people this sort of food and feed these people this type of food. And then he said, like, you'll come back and see what the effect is.
It's
interesting.
Putting a control group in and things like that. So
yeah. And it's quite. I think Daniel's quite early on in the Bible. It's like it's quite interesting to see that there is.
So it's in loads of people's religious texts.
There, yeah. Well, if it's in the Old Testament, it will be.
Yeah. That made up for not having Amy's story. So.
I know, right?
20 minutes later. Right, okay.
So, Ross, what have you read online this week?
I have read online this week that women are perceived differently from men, even when they're robots.
Oh.
So female robots are perceived to have more positive human qualities such as warmth, experience, and emotion than male robots. We see this in stuff like our helpers, so people, I'm not going to say any of the names because they'll start speaking to us. But the,
Alexa.
Yeah. Those sort of things there.
I'll say it. I got my headphones in. Nobody can hear me. It's great.
So they're all female names and voices because people are happier like getting help from a female robot than a male robot. Now, you can change your Siri to be a male. I'm not sure if you can change Alexa. I don't think you can, actually. But the pre-programmed one is a female because people are happier and feel warmer and they feel better when they're talking to a female robot.
Huh. That's actually really interesting.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think like now of like helper robots that are out there. Like even in basic like sci-fi movies and stuff. And then you've got like...
The ones that are male tend to end up killing people.
Okay, so yeah, so I did, yeah, the Terminator, I was like, oh, yeah, he killed people. But then I was like, Rosie the Robot from the Jetsons was the cleaner and, like, maid.
That was probably more to do with sexism and misogyny at the time.
Probably, but let's pretend it's not. No, let's not pretend it's not. Yeah, it probably was. Definitely is. Oh, but do you think that actually, but that's a good point though, do you think that actually plays into it as well? Into why there is the perception that female robots are
there to help.
Seen in that role. You know, since we're two guys discussing this on the podcast.
I don't know. I with stuff like Alexas and Siris and things like that, I'm not sure, but I can certainly see with other things that maybe, like your...
Rosie the robot. Well, actually, I suppose, think about it.
We've got this problem of institutionalized sexism in...
Yeah. Well, you know,
the robots were crazy.
Like, automatically, we all assumed that the Terminator robot was a male, and yet I'm quite sure in the... Okay, now, granted, not a great basis for the start of the conversation, but... I'm sure in the latest version that the robot is a female.
Terminator 3 was a female as well, wasn't it?
I don't know. Which one was 3?
The one where they actually launched Skynet. So before any of the Genesis or Survivor or whatever the other ones are.
I don't
It's the last of the Arnie trilogy.
He's still in though.
Yeah. But the Arnie was in 3, and then there was 2 that where they just used as like CGI stuff, and then he came back.
All right, okay. Okay, well, I'm quite sure in one of the recent ones that it's a female.
Yeah, so that's, can we think of any other robots that are in stuff? Humans that had loads of robots, but that they had males and females. The TV show,
mm-hmm. Actually, with their main, not the main robot, but essentially your main character robot was a female.
Yeah.
Is Ex Machina?
Yeah, I've not seen that. Definitely.
Yeah, neither have I. Yeah. But I'm quite sure she's female.
Yeah, well, I was saying we're assigning gender roles here. they are robots.
Yeah, we are. They are robots. But Westworld.
Oh, I've not seen Westworld.
Yeah, Westworld main character is a female robot.
But there's male robots as well, though, isn't there?
There
we
is.
Need to find something like equivalent to like Alexa, Judge Dredd, Sully from iRobot.
Well, is Siri
Sully?
Hal from 2001 Space Odyssey. Oh, the robot from Alien.
David.
Oh, that's who you mentioned, yeah. Wasn't it? Oh no, that's not the one I was thinking of.
Oh, is there another robot?
But you're right. It's there. Well, it's from the same sort of group of robots.
Yeah. Okay.
Hmm.
Is the other one helpful?
No. Goes around killing people.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Is there a helpful male robot? Tom.
Who's Tom Tom?
Oh, old school. Sat-nav.
I'm not sure we can assign a gender to that sat-nav.
No, I'm sure Tom was male.
You think? I can't remember. I know Google Maps and stuff speaks to you with female voice.
But then I suppose, but then Siri, you
yeah,
can.
So,
you
in fact, sat navs are probably are you? Female voices. Like you can probably change it. My yeah. sat navs are female voice.
This is quite an interesting. So, guys, actually, if anybody else out there can solve our conundrum, please do get in touch. iReditOS@gmail.com.
Eva from
help us out. Eva, oh yeah, Eva.
She doesn't kill people. She's female.
No, but the ship's computer did.
And it was male.
And it was male.
We think. We're just assigning genders.
This is terrible.
Let's stop assigning genders anyway. To robots. But yeah, just I thought it was quite interesting that people change how... So the study was that people change how they like spoke to robots depending on whether they were sort of male or female.
Hmm.
So I don't know if like the... Even if you know some websites come up with like a chat box of like names you sort of speak to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if do they use sort of male or female names in them, or do they?
Not when it's the chat bot. I don't think they do.
Yeah.
Until you get onto a real person. Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. Yeah, that's quite interesting.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep an eye out for that. Yeah. So.
So, Amy. Amy's not here. Andrew, did you know that after more than 4,000 blood tests, it is suggested that our bodies age in three distinct shifts, or three distinct ages, our body starts to move into, aging processes?
Yeah.
So, do you want to take a guess at what the ages are?
I feel about...
So there's three ages.
I feel 30, because when I hit 30, everything changed. Knees start getting sore.
Sore back.
Yeah. My foot starts getting sore. Like, first thing when I get up in the morning, foot's a bit sore, a bit stiff.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely didn't have that in my 20s.
Okay, so 30 is your first one. What's your other two?
Two more, okay. I'd say quite late then. So I'm going to say like 60s and then like 80s.
Oh man, you've almost nailed
it. Oh, right, okay.
So, our body seems to shift, reading this wee bit of the article, the body shifts to shift gears three times during our lifespan. So, the research back in 2019...
Sorry, my cat has a magnetic collar and is just getting attached.
Did it just get attached to something?
Yeah, it's getting attached to the table. I'm moving away and get attached to the table. Yeah. So sorry if anyone heard that.
That is brilliant. I thought you'd drop something.
No, it's just the cat.
See the shenanigans we get to when Amy's not here. In 2019, it was suggested that those years are 34. So you weren't actually that far off.
Yeah. Oh.
I unfortunately am now 34.
Oh no, look how much stuff's falling apart and I'm not even 34 yet. How bad's next year going to be?
And then you've got 60, and then you've got 78.
Oh yeah, I was
so
pretty
you weren't
close,
actually
yeah.
that far off. So yeah,
you know,
so
you
basically
can tell,
what
like, you look
for,
at someone that's like mid-70s and look at someone in their 80s, and there's a definite distinct difference there of...
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's
of just that this like a changing of age, like these, but then also you can see people who are older, who are still, you know, full of life and quite off they go.
Yeah,
you know, if you look like I mean, in all fairness, David Attenborough and the Queen, both of them, they're both 92, 93, and
yeah, but you wouldn't give them a toddler to look after them.
No, very Whereas true. Very
in your
true.
70s, you might still.
that's very true.
That's
very
what I was true. Judging on.
Yeah. You can clearly tell that we have different priorities in our
when
lives.
When can I stop pying off my kids to my parents?
So, basically, what they were looking at was that they were looking at using the proteome, which is how much of your DNA codes for proteins. So they were looking at the different protein levels and being able to identify certain factors within those proteins at specific ages that might indicate that there's a change or an aging process in some cases. So they took multiple readings of proteins around the ages 34, 60, and 78. Now, probably the most exciting thing that I read in this article was that it was discussed around young adulthood... At age 34, yeah.
Don't feel like that, but okay.
Late to middle age is 60. And then old age isn't until you're 78. So do you know what?
We're young adults.
Take that take that side part, or that middle part. I think it's side part. Take those side parts, take those skinny jeans, millennials, and live your best life. Because you know what? Don't listen to Gen Z. You're not old age.
But chafing, though.
Because like, that's only 7 to 8.
Think of the chafing.
That's not the point. We worked hard for them. We will keep
I've
them.
Worn trackies for a year now.
Well, do you know
what? I've even got stretch trackies. I went to the shop, got special stretch trackies. I can squat on these babies. I can do whatever I want. I don't want to go back to skinny jeans.
Well,
I don't want to go out to pubs anymore.
Someone asked me why millennials, etc., and being a confirmed millennial now, why we like skinny jeans.
When were you an unconfirmed millennial?
When I thought I wasn't a millennial because I was like, I don't like avocado toast. Turns out I actually do quite like avocado toast, and I do quite like avocados. But turns out that the reason that we love skinny jeans is because we used to wear jeans. Do you remember wearing jeans that like would rip at the bottom?
Yes.
And you just keep wearing them, right? They were far too long for like your legs, and they always used to get. Remember, they used to get wet, and then that water would like ride up your jeans, right? So there you are, Gen Z. For all of our Gen Z listeners, that's why we like to wear comfortable clothing. Anyway, back to the point. So
that's why my new trackies have. They've got the jobby catcher, but so they're just excellent. They're a bit tight. They're verging on the leggings. They're not quite leggings, but they're definitely a bit tight.
Are these ones you got at that Sporting Goods shop?
I did. Decathlon, thank you for your sponsorship this week. $12.99, great pair of tracksuit bottoms. They also do, if you want to do a random sport, like archery or horse riding.
They do have archery stuff.
They have, canoeing. Give me a sport. Mm-hmm. Let's see if Decathlon have it.
All right. Shinty.
Shinty, we've got hurling balls, yeah.
They're not the same thing.
Yeah, that's just what the Irish call it.
Well, they're almost the same thing. To be fair. Are we actually going to put this in? But yeah, Decathlon are great.
So go to Decathlon and use the code IREDOS10 to get 10% off your next offer. You have to go and pick it up in person,
and
some great
pay full price.
And pay full price.
But please feel free to use that code.
We're a Decathlon affiliate, so when you spend your Decathlon affiliate coins, we get money, so thanks very much for that.
Anyway, so they don't know why this is happening. Or like what's causing it or things like that. So there's obviously still quite a lot of massive questions, but they have noticed this sort of trend of information.
Yeah.
And they're looking into it, but they think that actually this might be able to be used as an indicator to see if you are aging, if your physical age or your body age is, if you are aging quicker than, say, the average person. Now, obviously, this falls into a whole load of, ethics and morals. Should we have this data? Is this information that people need or want? You know, is onto the whole, having your DNA tested, etc. Do people want this sort of information available?
Facebook have so much information on you already. Why don't they just have your DNA? It make everything better.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's an interesting concept and actually falls into what we were talking about earlier with... the AstraZeneca vaccine about or vaccination really about people having passports and all that sort of stuff, and all this information is they talk about vaccine passports, etc., totally, but actually all that information is already kept on your record anyway.
Yeah, it's already stored there.
So, which is that's something that's already stored. Your vaccination list is something you can get at the doctors. So it's quite interesting though how we perceive it and how it's sort of put out there, but I just thought that was really interesting, like actually that there are markers
sort of distinct
and actually
ages, and you can totally I think sort of see that, and when you see people aging that you do
well,
someone that's 28 is the same as someone that's 21. There's not really a change happening there, but someone that's 37 is definitely different to someone that's 28.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you get like baldness kicking in, you get grey hair kicking in, you get...
After the... I only had... So it was Plonkcast for me last week, and I had two celebratory beers while we were recording the podcast. I felt awful the next day, and it was only two, and they weren't even that strong. And I was like, horrific. I mean, I wasn't hungover, dangerous, or anything like that, but I didn't feel great.
Yeah.
And when you think back to how you used to feel when, you know,
down a bottle of vodka,
two beers were nothing.
Yeah.
But yeah, these AG things are important, and it's actually quite interesting to see that they're a lot later than we maybe had assumed. I think a lot of people assume that, you know, as soon as you hit like your 20s, like, oh, it's all cool and it's all different. And, you know, 18, teenagers, we look at the younger points of changes, but actually they're kind of quite relatively well spaced out. Maybe 60 to 70.
Protein changes like younger then? Because like with kids, like, if there's a change from like 30 to 40, surely there's changes in kids from like 5 to 15 or something like that.
Yes, no, there is changes.
So these are just the changes that are looking at in adults.
But these are aging changes. So these are changes where maybe proteins aren't doing what they used to do.
Oh, okay, so they're starting to die off and be less.
Be starting
less
to
efficient
maybe,
or something.
Yeah, as because of the aging process. Okay. So it is quite interesting. Yeah. So there you go. So, now let's move on to our questions from the public.
Okay, so Amy's not here, so I have managed to hack into our Instagram account and get some questions. Oh no, I've been locked out again. Hold on. How
can you be locked out? Are you not just signed in all the time? Do you want me to?
No, I'm in. It just reset itself. All right. Okay. Good. Right. So first question: where does wind come from? It appears to just appear. It seems to just appear. So, Andrew, you got an answer to that?
Well, lots of the times when you digest...
No. Wrong kind of...
Wrong
kind of wind,
I think. I knew fine well.
Is it, though? Like wind, is wind. It that wind? Maybe it is that wind. It seems to just appear. No, it must be air wind.
Well, side note. Farts, as our technical term. Is basically just a build-up of the breakdown. So as your food gets broken down into your gut, that moves through your small intestine and into your large intestine, and then it kind of just passes out. It's just a build-up of your gut bacteria breaking down. So it's a byproduct of the bacteria in your gut breaking down your food. Yeah.
And then killing the environment, is that right?
No.
Is it not methane?
Not with the amount of methane that we're producing. Not human beings.
7 billion of us, or 8 billion of us now?
Yeah, but we're not constantly all farting.
That's my brother.
We're not all constantly farting because we're not all constantly eating foods that necessarily produce methane gas.
What about vegans? They're all over the lettuce. Like, all that does is produce gas.
Lettuce, not so much.
Cabbage does.
You are right. Your things like your now I can't remember. Is it calciferous vegetables? But your things like Brussels sprouts, beans, pulses. Kale, dark green leafy vegetables, they can produce that, yes, but again, highly unlikely that we're causing any major damage.
Yeah,
especially the amount that we're producing,
nothing compared to cows.
However industrially farmed cows, yes, there is a significant issue.
Yeah,
cool. I'm going to assume it's the other type of wind. So I'll leave that one up to you.
Over to me. Okay, right. So basically the Earth is spinning round, and as it spins round, it drags the air around with it. And that's what creates wind, essentially. If you put it in nice, easy terms.
Is that it?
Yeah. That's all our weather, our sea currents. It's just the fact the Earth's spinning round, and it's sort of dragging to the... Basically, everything has inertia. Everything wants to stay where it is. So the air wants to stay where it is. But then when the ground moves underneath it, the air gets dragged along with it. So that's why like the air, like where we are, is constantly going from west to east. Because that's the way the Earth's spinning around. So the air is sort of staying still, and we're sort of spinning underneath it. And the air is sort of hitting us in the face.
Huh. I never noticed that before.
Yeah, so that's why the Gulf Stream of air is doing that. It's I think it's pretty high up. Or is the Gulf Stream the water? I always forget.
Gulf Stream the water one.
And there's a Gulf Jet Stream then that's air. So both of them travel from somewhere near New York over to us, just because that's the way they are spinning. Land masses do have an effect on how the air and water move, but our weather tends to come from there because that's the way they are spinning. So stuff that's on like a westerly side tends to get like wetter, more exposed to stuff. So like where you are. And the stuff that's on our more eastern side tends not to be. It's not just the UK, that's in most places. However, if you've got like a big landmass like Africa, then that's why the Middle East is so dry, because there's the everything's constantly moving that way around, so that the air that's traveling to the Middle East is coming from generally like Sahara in Africa, which is why all that stays so dry. Whereas when you get to somewhere like India, it's a bit wetter because you've then got sort of wind carrying it back up again.
Oh, okay. So that is actually so. I actually now know who the question is from, and yes, that's because it's incredibly windy up here right now.
All right, it's pretty windy down here too. So
yeah.
Okay.
Cool, Ross. What's our next question? Quite all right.
So this question is: how does body hair know when to stop growing? Andrew.
Oh, do you know? Do you have an idea?
My idea is that so the hair in your head grows longer because we shampoo it, we do stuff to keep it like being good, and it's probably got stuff in it that makes it grow a bit longer anyway. But basically, I think the your hair just dies after a certain point. So like the ends of it just sort of die. So if I'm looking at like the hair on my hands, for example, after a certain amount of time outside the body, I'm showing Andrew my arm here.
For the tape, Ross said the hair on my hands and then showed his arm.
So the hair on my arm, all the hair on my palm. Oh wait, no. So all the hair on my arm, like the further away it gets from the skin, it's like whiter and thinner and like looks like it's sort of dying a bit. So I think that just, yeah, when it gets a certain length, it just, the keratin?
Here's
I was
going to
say denatures, that's probably not the right word. Just stops being the right keratin structure and just sort of falls apart.
So for the entomology, you wouldn't be wrong in saying that keratin denatures, because keratin does denature. It is a protein.
So where are the bugs?
Entomology.
Etymology.
Ah!
Oh. You made my mistake.
So the etymology is correct, because so it would denature because it is a protein. It's just a slightly different function of protein. So basically, you know, your hair doesn't really know when to stop growing. Your hair will actually just continue to grow. However, it will only grow to a certain length, so there's only so much that the hair follicle will start to produce. And depending on where your hair follicle is, the information in there, so the DNA that is within those cells, is programmed to make the hair a certain length, which is why your arm hair is the length that it is the style that it is, because you'll notice that the hair on your head is different from the hair on your arms, which is different from the hair near your pubis, or your pubic region, let's just go with it. And like there's obviously it's coarser, so pubic hair is obviously coarser and curlier, whereas arm hair is kind of straighter and a little bit lighter, and then head hair is considerably longer. So again, the hair follicles are the thing that is actually making the hair, and it's just slowly growing out and out and out and out and out. You were saying there that your arm hair looks different colours on the ends. That's probably actually just due to the thickness of the hair and the refractive, here you are, the physics part, the refractive index of the hair at that particular point. Because if you look at your hair through one of those. You've got a digital microscope, don't you?
Yeah, that's cool. Not at home.
Yeah. So when next you're at work, have a look at your hair, and you'll see that it is hollow on the inside.
Yeah.
Just very finely, but the way that the light passes through will change it color. However, there will come a point where the hair follicles will start to die, or will no longer produce hair, which is when balding will start and hair will start to disappear. I suppose on the sort of continuing on with this hair growing, hair will eventually, you know, when your time comes, hair does stop growing, and people always assume that when you die, your hair and your nails grow. But actually what's happening is that your skin is receding. So your skin goes back and everything looks as if it's moved forward, but actually it is exactly where it is.
Okay.
But these fast-producing hair follicles, and again, this is a total side note, but anybody who's getting chemotherapy or radiotherapy for cancer treatment, it actually damages the fast-producing cells.
Yeah.
Because cancer is a fast-producing cell, and therefore hair follicles are also fast-producing cells, as well as ovaries and testes, which is, you know, why certain things have to be done, you know, samples, etc. But that's why some people can lose their hair, because those cells have been damaged, and because they're fast-producing, because I think it's chemotherapy, radiotherapy, one of them, or both of them, are unspecific.
Yeah.
So they just attack all the cells that are fast-producing, which is why you can lose your hair. But yeah, essentially your hair doesn't know when to stop growing. It just grows until it either falls out or the hair follicle end, the root, finishes.
Yeah. So
but most of the time,
so
you know...
it's constantly growing, or it's...
It'll be constantly growing... And you will probably have bits. It'll be a slower rate than maybe
if I singed all my hair off there, it wouldn't start growing quicker because it's gone.
No.
That would just keep growing.
No, it would still grow at the pace, but again, your perception of time would seem that it grows faster.
Yeah, just because you're doing it.
Yeah, so again, if we're talking about, you know, if you're a cyclist, a swimmer, or just getting ready for your night out on the 28th of April or whenever it is,
in the dark
in a pub and you're gonna be, you know, and you want to shave your legs, what you're actually doing is you're only just really just taking the top off, and then the rest grows out of it, so your hair is like continually growing, but what's happening is that the ends kind of get chopped off, a bit like our, you know, beards or facial hair is the same
sort
of way.
Cool. Next question, bit more of an entomology word. Is it entomology? Etymology. I always get this mixed up.
Oh no, you've done this before.
Yeah, it's not the one with insects. I think it's etymology.
No.
Where does the word science come from?
Oh.
I don't actually know, so I'm going to have a quick Google. Do you have any idea? So I could tell you like where physics comes from.
I assume... Oh, I know, right. So that's the thing. I've got that stupid Big Bang Theory thing going through in my head. What is physics?
I've typed in science entomology and just got loads of bugs.
I actually don't know.
Right, so Latin scientia.
No, I don't know where it comes from. Oh, is it Latin? Oh, scientia is the word for knowledge. Oh,
okay. So
the Latin word scientia means knowledge. A systematic enterprise that builds and organizes knowledge in the forms of testable explanations and predictions about the universe.
Ah, there we go. So that's where science comes from.
Wikipedia. which we shouldn't use, but it's literally referenced three times.
Yeah, why would you not use Wikipedia?
Well, there are two reasons. So, well, there's a for and an against. So, when I would use it, would be okay, so I wouldn't use
daily
it
in my teaching.
Let's go with why I wouldn't use it. I wouldn't routinely use it, and I would definitely never reference from it. I did that once in my degree and it did not go down well. that was on the early days of Wikipedia. So I wouldn't reference it and wouldn't wholly use it as my source. because it's unreliable, because it can be changed by your average Joe who can sign in. It can't be changed easily now. Oh, have they fixed that?
Yeah. It's very different to how it was like back in the day when anyone could change anything. And basically you get like a ranking of... So if you're a Wikipedia like moderator, essentially, then you can go in and change whatever you want.
Ooh.
But if you just if you just wanted to go in and change something, it wouldn't let you. It wouldn't let you do it. Yeah.
Well,
so it still can be changed. So if you are a moderator that's spent years building up your Wikipedia thing, you still could do stuff. But then
you could still could do it. Yeah.
But then if someone calls out as wrong, then you lose your moderator thing. So it's a pretty good system now for actually the content on there is pretty good, and it can't just be changed by your average Joe, as you were saying.
So that would be my other reason for using it. I would always use it as a starter. I wouldn't use it as my main source. I would back it up with other things. Yeah.
Now, it annoys me a bit now that, because everyone goes, "Oh, don't use Wikipedia as a reference." But 10 years ago, yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
not everyone's aware of the sort of processes Wikipedia has gone through to try and create the greatest encyclopedia in the world.
Well, I think as well, the fact is though that, like, again, they reference a lot of the stuff where things have come from.
Yeah, so you can go and find them.
Some of the citations you look at aren't
any better than Wikipedia. They're just a random guy's website. You're like, well, that's useless.
And that, I think that's maybe the bit where I would say, not be careful, but like we say, like quite a lot, is check references. You know, go and do those further studies. Like, pull it from a couple of different sources to not validate it, but make sure that the information that you're then taking is sound.
Yeah. Basically, this week I've been listening to this. This is a random thing to come in here, but it sort of relates to what we were just talking about there.
All right. Okay.
I've been listening to a podcast called "How They Made Us Doubt Everything." It's from BBC. It's on sort of BBC Sounds or whatever. And it's just to give you a quick synopsis of it. It's basically talking about how media agencies basically throw doubt on science allow companies to keep making money, essentially. So basically it was first used in the tobacco industry in the 60s, and there was starting to be research that cancer causes cancer, that cigarettes cause cancer. But the media companies or the tobacco industry got together, they hired loads of people to basically cast doubt on all the science that's being done, so that people will still sort of keep spending money on cigarettes, essentially. And they did the same thing with climate change. That was sort of started in the 80s. Basically spent a lot of money causing doubt on climate change by funding other research and loads of just sort of stuff that sounds really bad and dodgy now.
Yeah. Well, that's quite interesting. Those sorts of things are really interesting, because there's clearly something behind it that is driving, you know, those important decisions. So, there is something else behind the science that is not, well, that is obscuring the science so that it works in their favor.
Yeah. So one of the tactics was they gave money to scientists to carry out stuff. And it wasn't necessarily, in fact, it was very rarely science that went directly against what they were doing. But let's say one of the examples they used was cigarettes causing cancer. But there was another researcher that he wanted to prove that genetics caused cancer. So they funded this guy to do huge studies to try and prove that genetics caused cancer. And in doing that, when people said, "Oh, cigarettes cause cancer," well, they could say, "Oh, it could also be genetics." So it just casts doubt on the thing. So there's no bad science like going on. It's all good science, but it's funding the wrong, not the wrong science, funding science that can cast doubt on the sort of main scientific belief. And it finished with an amazing fact that 97% of scientists believe in climate change, and only 30% of Americans believe in science change and climate change.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, which is like astounding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you lay the figures out like that, it is.
And America's all over the internet, so that's what we see here is a lot of...
Which is, yeah. So I suppose social media, in a way, has a...
lot to answer for.
a role to play in the information that is perpetuated out.
Yeah, well, it's funny because it used to be... Because the thing, it all talks about the 80s and 90s and how it was all traditional media that did it. So it was your newspaper articles... TV, because TV was a big new thing, so getting the TV, like your James Corden, your late night hosts and stuff, you get them sort of discussing it. And there's a big thing about balance in the media as well, and how, like, the BBC, for example, would bring on someone that believes in climate change, and then they bring on someone that has an opinion that climate change wasn't real. And it looks like both of those things have equal weight. When one's a scientist who spent like 5 years researching it, and the other one just read a newspaper article and said, "No, I don't believe it."
Your potential grumpy or cranky uncle.
Yeah. So
who is there?
So I thoroughly enjoyed that. So the podcast was How They Made Us Doubt Everything. So I highly recommend that if you're looking for something to listen to after this.
Oh, great! That sounds like a podcast I'm ready to download on my smartphone. And if you have a smartphone. And you'd like to send us a question, then please feel free to drop us an email at iReaditOS@gmail.com. Or you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok at iReaditOS. Please tell everybody about our podcast. Please give us some reviews. We do like to read about them. Please also feel free to just drop us an email just to say hi, or send us a message just to say hi. We kind of like to read those ones too. If you would like to buy us a coffee, please feel free. And our merch store is still there if you'd like to get any gifts for your nights out that you're going to be having soon. Plenty of tote bags there. So thanks, guys, and we will see you next week.
Thank you. Farewell.
Bye.
This podcast was hosted by Andrew. Produced by...
And Ross.
Ross. Executive producer, Amy. Sound editing was done by Ross.
I'm trying to think of like another... that we could put in like another wee bit. Like, I don't know. No, no, no.
Comical genius, Ross.
What? Rude. Right, okay, I'm stopping it now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.